Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Rocket Nation, what is going on? Good to be back on air with you again. This is the fourth installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. I'm your host, Christian Adams. Known to the rest of the world as Rocket, I bring you the best and only the best sports all day, every day, sort of, kind of, you know, that type of thing. Well, tonight, we're going to have another great and exciting show. The main event topic we'll be discussing is the legacy of former now former NFL running back LaDainian Tomlinson, who spent most of his career with the San Diego Chargers and spent the last couple of years with the New York Jets. He is officially retired as of this offseason. Congratulations to him for an outstanding, phenomenal career. He was certainly the best running back in the past 10 years. Since being drafted in 2001, a lot of people didn't think he had what it took. You know, the story going into the draft was he didn't have great measurements. He didn't have great measurables as a great finesse runner. Well, he certainly proved the doubters wrong. And I'm not going to lie to you, I didn't look at him much throughout his college career. But I will tell you that since he suited up in an NFL uniform, he has just amazed me. I'm pretty sure he's amazed you, too. Just watching the guy run was just phenomenal. It was just amazing to see what he has been able to accomplish. And he has certainly set some great milestones. He's done so much for the game. He hasn't won a championship, but who says a Super Bowl requirement has to be recommended? You know, a Super Bowl doesn't have to be required to be great. Sometimes you just get the benefit of being on a team and things like that happen. You win a championship, so be it. I mean, look at how many former NFL draft busts have won Super Bowls. There's been a lot of them. There's been a lot of average players who have won Super Bowls, too. So from a running back standpoint, I mean, some of the running backs that we've seen win Super Bowls and be on Super Bowl winning teams haven't exactly been stellar. Like, for example, the Willie Parker, he's a guy that didn't sustain it for very long. Thomas Jones, when he won the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay, he didn't play a whole lot of years. He's been a good back, but I won't consider him a great, you know, among the greatest. It's just some of these guys that just been in the right situation at the right time, and unfortunately for LaDainian Tomlinson, that hasn't always been the case. Now, I got some quick news about him. He is now moving into a new career, which is radio. Great way to go. I like that. The NFL Network and Sirius XM Radio announced today that the 2006 NFL MVP will be joining the outlets as a broadcaster. Congratulations. He's starting a new career. It's a new era. And, again, I'm very happy for what he's done, and I'm looking forward to getting more news and more knowledge from him as a broadcaster. So that should be pretty interesting to see. I will be tuning in to many of his broadcasts as much as possible. So, again, congratulations to LaDainian Tomlinson for an outstanding career. You're certainly one of, if not one of the top five, then one of the top ten backs ever. And we'll have more on this story and him later on in the broadcast. Speaking of football news, I want to stick on football real quickly. Now, as you know, week three of the preseason has come and gone. We're getting into the final week of preseason action, and we got a game tonight between the Patriots and Giants. Technically, it's a Super Bowl rematch, but from a preseason standpoint, it really doesn't matter. The fourth preseason game is usually where the starters play little or not at all. And in this particular case, we might not see the starters from either team play much, maybe the first 2 or 3 minutes of the quarter, and that's it. Usually the fourth preseason game is for the rookies and for the newer players and the guys that are trying to make the roster. This is the opportunity for them to really showcase what they can do. Cuts have continued to come in. Most teams start off with about 100 players, and you have to cut the roster down to the actual 53 before the first week of the regular season starts. One particular player who is not part of a team right now is Terrell Owens from the Seattle Seahawks. Apparently, Terrell Owens tweeted this past week that he is no longer with Seattle. And to me, that doesn't come as a shock because, for one, Terrell Owens just didn't look right to me in the Seattle Seahawks uniform. He hasn't exactly looked like himself, and this is what happens when you have a year away from football action. Sometimes you get the benefit of the doubt, and things work against you. In this particular case, he's 38 years old. We don't even know if he's going to play one or two more years at the most. I will say that the Seahawks were pretty much sold, and they're still sold on Braylon Edwards being the number one guy. So if you're T.O. or if you're one of the Seattle Seahawks coaches, you have to wonder, how would T.O. mesh in that particular system? Would he be happy playing second fiddle? Terrell Owens has always been used to being the number one guy, even going back to San Francisco when he lined up alongside Jerry Rice. When Jerry Rice went down, mainly in 1997 after the first game of the year, when Jerry Rice went down with what looked like a season-ending injury, He missed a lot of action that year. Terrell Owens stepped in, filled in admirably well, and he became more of the household wide receiver. And when Jerry Rice moved on to Oakland just a few years later, Terrell Owens became the marquee guy, and he has really done his thing. He's on his way towards a Hall of Fame career, most definitely. He had a brief stint in Philadelphia. It was not a very good stint in 2005. 2004, he was definitely on top of his game before the injury, which required him to miss the two playoff games before the Eagles reached the Super Bowl. Also, he had a few years in Dallas, played 1 year in Buffalo. That didn't work out too well. He played in Cincinnati for 1 year, and that was an okay stint. But let's be honest, Terrell Owens is going to be remembered for a lot of other things, on the field and even off the field. He's looking for a team right now, so we'll see if another team is interested in bringing a guy like him in. That remains to be seen. We're also looking forward to seeing what the Seattle Seahawks do. Now, check this out. Apparently, Matt Flynn will not be their starting quarterback this year. Pete Carroll, the head coach, decided to change up the script and name Russell Wilson, who is their rookie pick this year's draft. He's going to be the starting quarterback. That sends a shocker through Seahawk Nation, to be honest with you. And I'm kind of shocked about that a little bit because I was not expecting that to happen whatsoever. But if you look at the play between these two passers, Russell Wilson has played much better. It's plain and simple. When he stepped in, he did his thing, and he performed amazingly well. Matt Flynn, no disrespect to him, he hasn't really shown much from a passer's situation. Now, I will say, if you're Pete Carroll, you're basically wondering, you know, how is this whole thing going to work out? But let's be honest. This is not the first time we've seen quarterbacks who are drafted and end up starting right away. I mean, we've seen it with Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Joe Flacco, Ryan Leaf, Peyton Manning. We've seen it happen with a lot of these rookie quarterbacks that have been drafted first round or even the second or third round. This is a situation where, well, we'll see what he's made of. Because all the talk right now among rookie quarterbacks is Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, and Ryan Tannehill from Miami, who is now their starting quarterback. That was announced last week. Congratulations to him. He's got his work cut out for him. So this is going to be another season where the talk of the rookie quarterbacks is really going to be steaming. This is going to be pretty interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys are going to perform. I'm looking forward to seeing who's going to do what and how well will they fare. Because let's be honest, all these teams that these guys are playing for, nobody's really expecting their teams to really do much this season, particularly the Indianapolis Colts, just because of the season that they're coming off of, and everyone is really expecting them to go through a rebuild process, mainly because of the moves they've made this offseason, getting rid of Peyton Manning and some of their veteran key players. They're still open to trading some of their veterans, so this will be an interesting season to see what these guys can do as far as from a passing standpoint, what can they do and all those other type of things. Now, regarding Wilson in Seattle, you have to wonder, what is he going to do? He's got Braylon Edwards to throw to. He's got Marshawn Lynch to lean on in the running game. It's going to fall down specifically on the offensive line protection. So we'll see what this offensive line can do and how well they can perform under pressure and what they can do with the rookie quarterback taking snaps under center. Now, as far as RG3 is concerned, I'm interested to see what he's going to do because he's going to be playing in the toughest division regarding all the rookie quarterbacks this upcoming season. Because all three of those other teams are potential playoff contenders, mainly the Giants because they're the defending Super Bowl champs, the Eagles because of all the hype surrounding them dating back to last offseason, and the Cowboys just for the simple fact that they are the Dallas Cowboys, and expectations are always high on them every year. And when you got a big-sized stadium like they do with a Jumbotron as big as an apartment, yeah, all the talk and all the expectations are going to be extremely high on you. So this will be interesting to see what they can do as far as how well will the Redskins be able to compete. Now, keep in mind, the Redskins swept the Giants last year with the mediocre quarterback in Rex Grossman and some of their other average passers that they've had on the roster. So not to mention, they got off to a 3-0 start. They lost that first game, that Monday night thriller in Dallas, in which they lost on what was a bad-looking situation. However, I will say that the Redskins are a team that they look like they can compete with anybody, so I can't wait to see how well they perform. Now, speaking of the Redskins, they have decided to move on without one of their longtime veteran players. Their tight end, Chris Cooley, has been cut. That announcement was made just a couple of days ago. He had a live press conference. Well, not necessarily a press conference, but he did speak to the media about it. He got a little emotional, as he should. When you spend all of your career up until a certain point with one team, yeah, you're pretty much going to show some emotion, and you're going to be saddened about it. But at the end of the day, business is business, and you have to understand that that's just the way the ball rolls sometimes. Players get cut all the time. Players get traded all the time. Players retire. You know, players move on. You know, it's just part of the game. That's just the way it is. Now, he basically spent 8 years with the team. He is their all-time leader in pass receptions amongst tight ends. He's been one of their more productive receivers from a wide receiver and even a tight end standpoint. So it's kind of sad to see him go for your Redskins fan, but at some point you have to move on. The team basically has decided to go in a different direction, so we will see what they do this year. You have to wonder what they're going to do in that tight end department from here on out. Chris Cooley was also a two-time Pro Bowler, 2007-2008. He was one of the most expensive players on the team, apparently. He's making $3.8 million in salary this year and a $3.85 million next year. So basically the Redskins made this cut from a more business standpoint. They felt like they had to do this to save some cap space, and sometimes that's another thing that you have to do. Now, there have also been a number of other cuts as well. A lot of kickers have been cut. One of them, Billy Cundiff of the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Cundiff was best known for missing what would have been a potential game-tying field goal in the AFC Championship game a year ago. The field goal would have tied the game and sent it into overtime, and he missed the field goal wide. He was way off, and it looked like it was about a 20- to 30-yard field goal, so it's a field goal that should have went in, and he missed it as time expired. And if you're a Ravens fan, you have to wonder if that's what led to his cut. But sometimes things like this happen, and is, you know, that's just the way it is. It's part of the game. That's just how it is. And he basically had limited range. The guy was 5-for-19 throughout his career from 50-plus yards and just 1-for-6 last season. Now, the Ravens cut him, and they decided to go with their rookie, Justin Tucker. So it's actually pretty interesting because Cundiff is now with the Redskins. So that's interesting. The Redskins called them as soon as Cundiff was cleared off waivers. So now Cundiff is now a Washington Redskin. So it looks like all the parties in this particular situation have decided to move on. He's 32 years old. He has a career field goal rate of 76.7. He spent his career with the Cowboys, Saints, Browns, and Ravens. He had been with the Ravens since the 2009 season, went to the Pro Bowl in 2010. He had a great year going 26-for-29. But when you think of him now, you think of him missing what was a 32-yard field goal attempt against the Patriots in the closing seconds of the AFC title game. That hurt. But there was a lot of bad situations that led to that game, so it wasn't just the kicker's fault that they lost. But when you have a chance to nail the kick, you got to live up to your end of the bargain, basically. And a 32-yard field goal, I mean, come on. Got to be kidding me. Well, speaking of the AFC North, the Browns, well, Trent Richardson hasn't played throughout the preseason, but the Browns are optimistic that they'll play him in the regular season opener against Philadelphia in week one of the upcoming season. Now, also, the Steelers Nation should be very, very happy. Wide receiver Mike Wallace returned to practice with the team. He basically missed the entire training camp. It remains to be seen if he's going to play in the Steelers' final preseason game. But he came back. Apparently, he had no regrets of missing any time. He has decided to move on from the situation. The Steelers have moved on, so he's back with the team now, and they need to get him back up to speed. Now, they have Antonio Brown, who's played exceptionally well throughout the preseason there, certainly leaning on him to do some big things. They got Jericho Cotri, who's been one of the underlooked receivers, but he's a guy that he'll turn it up every once in a while, but consistency has been an issue with him. Chris Rainey, another unknown receiver, they're looking for some big things for him. Ike Taylor. They're also looking for some things from him as far as this upcoming season is concerned. But he's back in camp. Wallace is, and last year he caught 72 passes, 1,193 yards, 8 touchdowns. He feels like before the Steelers face Denver in the regular season opener on September 9th, he's optimistic that an agreement can be reached. So we'll see what that happens. Now, unlike another big-name football player, Maurice Jones-Drew continues his holdout with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He expressed interest in a trade a week ago, but apparently the team has decided to say, no, they're not going to trade him. They're not going to cut him. They're confident that they can get a deal reached for him. And this is one of those things where a deal can happen before the start of regular season. Because think about it. Matt Forte, he got his situation worked out. Ray Rice, he got his situation worked out. Even the great Barry Sanders, he held out his entire rookie season and showed up the day before his very first game. And he went on to make history as one of the greats ever and arguably the greatest. More will be on that later on in the broadcast regards to the whole LT, LaDainian Tomlinson's legacy. But anyway, basically, I think what's going to happen is I think the situation can and will be worked out. Because if you're Maurice Jones-Drew, you're 32 years old, you don't really want to miss any time because of a silly holdout. If you feel like you can get a deal reached, if you want a long-term contract, work it out with the team to the best of your abilities. And if you're the Jaguars organization, do what you need to do to keep this guy because he is your face of the franchise. And you need him if you want Blaine Gabbert to remain your long-term starting quarterback because a young quarterback's best friend, and I've said this before, a young quarterback's best friend is a running back. Great offensive line protection and a great running game. And Maurice Jones-Drew is capable of doing those things because he's a great all-purpose back right now. He can run the ball. He can catch the ball out of the backfield for screens. He can run up the middle. He's tough to tackle. He's a little guy, but he's quick. He's very, very agile, but he's very, very tough to bring down. And running backs like that are usually a dime a dozen. You don't get too many backs like that in this league. So take it for what it's worth. And I'll be the first to tell you right off the bat that anytime you have a runner like that, anytime, you just want to be able to do the best that you can to the best of your abilities. So do what you can, and if you're the Jaguars organization, seriously, work this out. You know, work this out. Do whatever you need to do to make this deal go down and all those good things because you need him if you're going to even have a shot of even winning 5 or 6 games this year. To me, that division, the AFC South, it could be a little wide open regarding the Texans and Titans having a chance to compete. I think the Colts and Jaguars obviously are going to be on the outside looking in, but I think they'll surprise some teams this year. I think the Colts may surprise some teams with Andrew Luck. He looks like he's going to be a sensational passer in this league. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what these teams do this year. And if you're a Jaguars fan, seriously, get him back in camp. Do whatever you need to do to work out this whole deal because you need him if you're going to have a shot at competing against anybody and everybody as far as I'm concerned. Now, as far as Mike Wallace is concerned, it's good because this helps the Steelers' wide receiving core. And playing in a division where you got a good Baltimore defense, Cincinnati, they're on the rise, and it remains to be seen what Cleveland is going to do. But if you're the Steelers, you got a new offense, you got a new offensive coordinator, you're going to be running a new system, you need your best skilled players available so they can get up to speed on what's going to happen and all those other good things. Now, let me be the first to tell you, okay, I like what Mike Wallace has done. I think he's one of the best receivers right now. I certainly put him in the top 10. I think he's phenomenal. He's a great piece of talent. I'm happy to see him back in camp. And I know a lot of friends of mine who are Steelers fans, and I can tell you they're just as happy and probably even more happy that he's back in camp as well because he's going to be a big part of the Steelers' push to get back to the Super Bowl. And to be honest with you, I think the Steelers have a great shot. I think the AFC is going to be wide open. I would say between 5 teams, I say the Steelers, Patriots, Broncos, Ravens, and maybe even the Texans. as far as the top five teams who have the best chances of getting to the Super Bowl. But every team has a flaw, and all those teams have flaws as well. So the AFC, I will be paying extreme close attention to the AFC this year, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do. So this would be – it's good to see him back in camp. It really is. So this would be fun to see what they're going to do. And, again, I'm happy that he's back in camp, and this will be interesting to see. Now, as you know, the whole referee situation has gone from bad to worse this offseason. They're still trying to work out a deal. Last year it was the players and the coaches. This year it's the officials. Apparently, we are going to see some newer faces as far as officiating. And it's the replacement officials that we've seen so far in the preseason. We're going to see them in week one, at least week one as of right now. The announcement was made today that they're going to use the replacement officials for week one of the upcoming season. And if you're a fan like me, you got to be a little bit worried because throughout the preseason, I've seen these referees miss out on a lot of calls. However, I praise them overall for allowing defensive players to, in this particular situation, you know, with quarterbacks, you know, getting hit and everything, you know, with the whole quarterback protection thing, I've seen that these officials have, you know, pretty much let that whole thing slide. So I'm happy about that because I feel like, you know, the veteran wide receivers have overprotected these quarterbacks. And it's good to see players, you know, be held accountable for their own thing. My thing is this, okay? My thing is when it comes to the playing the position, no matter what position you play, I think no player should or any position whatsoever should get extra preferential treatment just because he's a quarterback. Yes, the quarterback is the leader. The quarterback is the toughest position to play. The quarterback is the key to winning. But over the years, when I've seen guys like Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers get hit and everything, and referees are so quick to throwing out the flag, I mean, come on. Guys are going to get hit all the time. It's just part of the game. I mean, give me a break. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm interested to see what these officials are going to do when the lights are really, really on them, because once the official season starts, once it's official and underway, it's going to be the real deal. This is going to be no walk in the park, and everybody will be watching you. Everybody. Now, keep in mind, also, with the new situation, the new rule where it allows fans to watch the same type of replays the officials are watching during the challenge reviews. So that's also going to be a huge, crucial thing because players like myself, fans like myself, we get to see what they see. So imagine being in an extremely hostile environment. Fan reaction is going to really dictate how well a situation like this is going to be played. So as far as I'm concerned, I cannot wait to see what's going to happen. And we're going to find out next week when the Cowboys and Giants take the field. The referees, the new referees, all eyes will be on them as well, not just the players. All eyes will be on them. And I can guarantee you, in New York, in a very, very high-profile environment, it's going to be really, 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 really challenging for those guys to come in and do their thing. So keep that in mind. And I will say, as far as all the teams are concerned, keep doing what you do. Keep doing what you do because, you know, all eyes will be on you guys, and there's going to be a lot of expectations from these teams this upcoming season. So good luck to you guys. And next week I will dedicate next week's broadcast to the upcoming season, which I will profile team by team, and I will tell you exactly what they need to do and how better they need to be in their particular situation. Now, as you know, in the NBA, the season's basically, to be honest with you, training camp is right around the corner. The USA has done their thing. This is going to be one of those seasons in which I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And You know, it's not been, it hasn't been a whole lot going on right now from the time of the Olympics up until now, but I could tell you that there's going to be a lot of roster moves, a lot of roster changes and stuff like that. I can just tell you right off the bat. Blake Griffin of the Clippers says he's ready to go now. His knee pretty much got his knee taken care of. He's back to 100% now, according to him. He's ready to go. So this will be interesting to see what the Clippers are going to do. Dwayne Wade, he's back on the court now. He had knee problems too. He didn't take part in the Olympic team this year. Blake Griffin himself, he had to leave, so he wasn't able to take part in much either. So Wade, he's basically back on the court now, so we'll see what he can do. Now, also, the WNBA has been back in session. I know a lot of people don't really watch the WNBA. You know, me being one of them, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't keep up to date with it as much as I should as a sports guy. But the WNBA, they've been doing their thing. It's been one of those years where it looks like the postseason's right around the corner. So good luck to all your WNBA teams that are going to be competing in the postseason. And I can't wait to see what your teams are going to do. Now, I know that we come across a lot of situations where we're living in a crisis situation right now where basically for the most part some of these high-profile leagues like the NBA and the NFL basically have gone through certain situations where players and owners have gone neck and neck in terms of getting deals done. We saw it twice last year with the NBA and with the NFL at the same time for quite a while. Now, according to this, according to Yahoo, talks between the NHL and its Players Association resumed today at the league offices a day after Commissioner Gary Bettman issued a second proposal with the hopes of securing a new collective bargaining agreement. Now, from the player standpoint, they would either likely reject his offer or issue a counterproposal sometime later this week. According to today, as of today, the two sides broke for the day in the late afternoon regarding their talks and stuff like that. Donald Fehr, the NHLPA's executive director, he said the counterproposal could come as late as tomorrow. Now, the current CBA in the NHL expires on the 15th of next month. The league has said it will lock the players out if a new agreement isn't in place by then. Now, keep in mind, the NHL had a lockout not too long ago, about 6 or 7 years ago. And at that time, it took them quite a while, actually, to get a deal done. Hopefully, this won't be the case this time. Hopefully, things will be done and things will be settled before the 15th. And they don't have a lot of time. They only got about, I would say, a good 2.5 weeks or so to get this whole thing taken care of because the NHL season, too, like the NBA, is right around the corner. In fact, the NHL season is going to be starting before the NBA season will be kicking off. So, again, as far as the NHL is concerned and their fans, if you're an NHL fan, you want this whole thing to be taken care of as soon as possible because, seriously, you don't want another lockout. We've had too many lockouts in sports nowadays, and it's just not good for the business, for sports in general. It's just not good. And I hate to be part of that situation right now, but it looks like things are going to get better. It looks like we could find out something as early as tomorrow, and I will have more for you by next week's broadcast whether or not a deal has been reached or if negotiations continue. Now, speaking of football, college football is getting ready to start this weekend. And me being a Michigan guy, I even watch Michigan State too. Michigan's got a big game. Their test is going to come real early. They're going to be going up against Alabama this Saturday evening, which would be a 8 o'clock game. It's going to be a high-profile game. That's actually going to be the matchup of the opening week. And I cannot wait to watch that game. I will be checking that out. That's going to be great. Bernard Robinson against that Alabama defense being anchored by head coach Nick Saban. Like the guy or not, Nick Saban is a good strategist. I give him props. He is just a good planner as far as scheming to go up against high-profile offenses and how high-profile players. Denard Robinson is really going to have his work cut out for him, and this is going to be the year to see whether or not he truly elevates into a passer. Michigan, to me, will win this game slowly based on how well he performs as a passer. So as far as I'm concerned, that's something he's going to have to work on, and that's all part of the mechanics as a passer. You know, we've seen a lot of college players over the years rely on their feet to win more games, and eventually they've had to kind of make a transition as a passer. We've seen it with Michael Vick. We actually seen it going back to the days of Randall Cunningham and, you know, a lot of those guys who like to be mobile passers who really relied on their feet more to win games as opposed to their throwing arm. So I cannot wait to watch that game. That's going to be a fun, fun game to watch. That's going to be an amazing contest, just amazing. We also got Michigan State going to be going up against Boise State. Boise State, they're 24th. Michigan State, they're ranked number 13. That's also going to be another big profile game. And that's actually going to be the second of three games. Actually, that's the only other game to feature two teams going head-to-head who are both ranked in the top 25. So we got the top two matchups, and they both involve Michigan teams. So this is going to be fun. That game between Michigan State and Boise State will take place Friday at 8 o'clock in East Lansing at Michigan State Field. That's going to be a great game. That's going to be a great offensive juggernaut. Everyone knows that Michigan State can throw the ball and run the ball. I know they're going to have a new quarterback this year. It's not going to be Kirk Cousins. Boise State, they're going to have a new quarterback too. And I can tell you, anytime you have a new quarterback, it's going to be an adjustment period between college teams, but as long as you keep your other players, or at least most of them, intact, you should be all right. It's a transition. It's a different transition, but it's also a challenge, and it's going to be a fun challenge for both teams to see what they've got as far as passers that they've recruited from either other college programs or from high school or, you know, division schools and things of that nature. So that's going to be interesting to see that particular matchup because both teams got juggernaut offenses. I will not lie to you. I'm a big Boise State fan. I just love watching their offense. I've been watching them closely since 2006. They're just a quick, high-paced offense. They don't waste time scoring. They can run the ball. They can move the ball up the field. They can do all those little things. I've had the pleasure of watching Titus Young, who is now a Detroit Lion, obviously. He played college ball at Boise State. And when the Lions drafted him last year, I was ecstatic because I'm like, man, we got a Boise State guy. This guy's going to run up the field. He's going to do some great things. And so far, so good. He's been playing exceptionally well. I expect this year to be a breakout year for Titus Young, and I think that he's going to really, really take a lot of pressure off Calvin Johnson as he works his way up the receiving chart. And who knows, by the end of the season, he could be the second wide receiver on the roster as opposed to Nate Burleson, who is kind of getting up there in age a little bit. But anyway, Boise State versus Michigan State, that game is going to take place this Friday, 8 o'clock p.m. We also got some very other interesting matchups coming up. We got number 22 Kansas State hosting Missouri State. Number 3 LSU will be hosting North Texas. Number 14 Clemson will be going up against Auburn. Number 10 Arkansas hosting Jacksonville State. Number 19 Oklahoma State against Savannah State. Number 7 Florida State hosting Murray State. Number 12 Wisconsin hosting North Iowa. Number 1 USC. The number 1 team, they're going to be hosting Hawaii. Number 4, Oklahoma, will be going up against UTEP. So we got a lot of great matchups. Number 5, Oregon, will be hosting Arkansas State. Now, these are just the Saturday games. The other game on Friday will be San Jose State going up against number 21, Stanford. This Thursday, tomorrow, number 9, South Carolina, will be going up against Vanderbilt. That's going to be another interesting matchup to watch. Sunday, September the 2nd, we got Kentucky going up against number 25, Louisville. And next Monday, we got Georgia Tech going up against number 16, Virginia Tech. So that's going to be another interesting matchup. And a lot of these matchups that they have on separate nights are usually interesting games. Also on Saturday, we got number 15, Texas hosting Wyoming. We got number 17 Nebraska hosting Southern Mississippi, or Southern Miss, whatever you want to call it. Number 6 Georgia hosting Buffalo. Number 11 West Virginia hosting Marshall. And number 18 Ohio State. Yes, I said Ohio State hosting Miami of Ohio. So that's going to be an interesting in-state, and I put that in quotation marks, in-state game. But, yep, our first matchup tomorrow evening will feature number 9 South Carolina against Vanderbilt. That game takes place at 7 p.m. So college football is really, really right around the corner, and it's less than 24 hours away from the very first game of the 2012 college football season. Good luck to all your teams. And to me, the conferences, to me, to watch out for, I think the Big Ten, obviously, the Pac-12, the Big 12, you really got to pay attention to that. The SEC, you really got to pay attention to that. Those are going to be some of the divisions to watch, because a lot of these teams that have switched divisions within the past year, some of these teams add more competition, more stiff competition, more strength. So I can't wait to see what these teams are going to do. And I really can't wait to see who will sustain their position as far as being ranked. Who's going to rank higher? Who's going to rank lower? Who's going to crack the top 25? Who's going to fall out of the top 25? So I cannot wait to see that game, and I'm really looking forward to number 8 Michigan and number 2 Alabama. Now, that game is going to be taking place in Texas. So this will be one of those games where either way you look at it, it's going to be down south in Alabama. They're going to have the home field advantage. They're the defending champions, so this is going to be one of those years where they're going to they might raise the banner in that game, and I think it's going to be one game to watch, and it's going to be certainly the best matchup to watch as far as the opener is concerned. So I can't wait. I cannot wait to watch that game, and again, good luck to all your teams. This is going to be one for the ill-fated at heart, baby. This is going to be one for the ill-fated at heart, and I promise you, this will be one season to remember. And one team to really, really watch out for, well, I wouldn't say watch out for, but pay attention to, is Penn State. It's going to be a new era. This will be the first time since 1961 that Penn State will start the regular season without Joe Paterno as their head coach. A lot of changes have been made in the front office. A lot of changes have been made with some of their players. It's a new era. The players are going to have their names placed on their jerseys. So you could tell that this is going to be a new era, certainly. So watch out for Penn State. Well, at least pay attention to them. All eyes will be on them this season to see how they bounce back from this very, very adverse situation. So keep an eye on them. And, again, good luck to all your teams, especially Penn State, Ohio State, now that they got Urban Meyer as their head coach. So this will be one of those situations where it's going to be interesting to see, and I'll be paying attention to them. We got a couple scores right now. We got two preseason games in action right now between the two teams that participated in the Super Bowl last year, the Patriots and Giants. That game is scoreless going into the second quarter. The Buccaneers and Redskins, Washington leads that game 6-0. Redskins' newly acquired kicker, Billy Cundiff, has kicked two field goals of 27 and 39 yards, so they're up 6-0. That game is also going into the second quarter. But what do you know, Billy Cundiff, he kicked two long field goals, and neither one of them have been past 50 yards. Wow. Wow. That's interesting. And the other game will be taking place between the Dolphins and Cowboys later tonight at 8:30. We also got a handful of preseason games which will be taking place Thursday. Falcons and Jaguars, Jets and Eagles, Vikings and Texans, Bills and Lions, Chiefs and Packers, Panthers and Steelers, Bengals and Colts, Ravens and Rams, Saints and Titans, Bears and Browns, Chargers and 49ers, Raiders and Seahawks, and Broncos and Cardinals. And that should close out the preseason, 2012 preseason. It's been a season where so far some of these rookies have been playing exceptionally well so far for the most part. So, again, congratulations to some of the players who have survived the cut so far. And even if you, let's say you do get cut, a lot of these players, and trust me, a lot of these players will get cut. That's just part of the business aspect of things. It's just the way it has to be. You know, the guys shut down the roster to 53 players. Just because one door closes on you doesn't mean another one. Doesn't mean that another door won't open. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. One door closes, there will be plenty more open. Believe in yourself. Believe in your talents. Believe in what you can do, and you will have a chance to play for someone, and you'll have a chance to audition for a team out there. It may take a while. It may take a week. It may take a year, but you stay the course. Don't give up on yourself. Do what you have to, and I promise you, you'll see your dreams really, really come to pass. Do what you have to get better and to maintain what you have, and I promise you, you're going to see yourself do some great things. And, yeah, I am I'm just happy, just happy to see some of these players even have a chance to play. A lot of players really can't say that, but take it for what it's worth. Take it for what it's worth. But a lot of players don't really get that opportunity. So, well, over in baseball, we got some scores right now to talk about real quickly. We got a lot of teams taking the field tonight. We're almost heading towards the end of the regular season. Let's see. Right now, we got a few finals. The Dodgers lost to the Colorado Rockies today by a score of 10. Actually, no, I'm sorry. The Dodgers went to Colorado and won by a score of 10-8. Blanton got the win as a pitcher. He's 9-12, but he gets a win, so he kind of moves up a little bit. It was one of those interesting games. The Dodgers, they made a trade with the Red Sox. Some of the players have been switching teams, and it looks like it's helping out the Dodgers so far. Toronto, they went to New York and defeated the Yankees 8-5. DC Sabathia gets his fourth loss. He's 13-4. His record is 13-4 as a pitcher this season. Escobar hit a home run for Toronto, which is his eighth of the season. The Blue Jays and Yankees, it was a tough loss for the Yankees. Yankees are trying to maintain division supremacy. I think they will. I don't think the Red Sox are going to catch them or anybody else in that division is going to catch them, really. So it looks like they got their division on lock. Cincinnati, the Reds, they went to Arizona and defeated the Diamondbacks by a score of 6-2. Other games that are still in progress, White Sox and Orioles, that game's at the top of the third. The White Sox are up 4-0. They score all four of their runs in the first inning. The Braves and Padres, Atlanta is down 2-1. They just scored their run at the top of the fifth. The Padres added their two runs in the bottom of the fourth inning. The Rays and Rangers, Tampa is up 6-0. They scored three runs in the first and three in the second. They're still in the top second, by the way, so they could tag on a few more to that. The Mets and Phillies, Philly is up 2-1 right now. They just scored. They're in the bottom of the second inning, so they just took a 2-1 lead. Oakland and Cleveland, Athletics and Indians, that game is scoreless. They're in the top of the third inning. The St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates, that game is now going to the top of the third inning, but the Pirates are up 1-0. They scored their run in the first inning. Other games to watch later on, we got the Mariners and Twins. The Twins have had a very disappointing season, unfortunately. They've been one of those teams that nobody's really been paying attention to. Seattle, they've sort of been an up-and-down team. They really haven't been much of the same since they traded Ichiro, but both parties have moved on, and sometimes you just got to trade away your veteran players and, you know, start fresh or whatever. Expectations will be high on them next year because of some of the younger players that they're bringing in. The Washington Nationals and the Miami Marlins, that game is scoreless in the third inning. They're in the bottom of the third inning right now. The Marlins do have a hit, but nothing to show for right now. The Tigers and Royals will be squaring off later tonight. The Milwaukee Brewers and the Chicago Cubs will also be going at it. Both of those teams have losing records. The Boston Red Sox, I talked about them. They're 62-68, so it's been a dismal year. There have been talks about some of the players wanting their manager, Mr. Valentine. They've called for his head, unfortunately. And he's a nice guy. But, again, sometimes being nice doesn't necessarily mean anything. It really doesn't, especially from a business standpoint. The Angels, they have a 67-62 record, but they're trying to fight for a wild card spot, but they got a lot of catching up to do, a lot. They're actually still up there in the range, but I would say they're a good three games from trying to claim the top spot for now and maintain it. That game will be taking place later tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern. And one more game that will be taking place tonight will be the Giants and the Astros. The Giants have been very, very impressive this season. They're 72-57, and they got a 35-29 road record going up against an Astros team that has a 40-89 record, and they're 27-36 at home. So that game will be taking place in about 15 minutes, really. So we got a lot of games in progress, and we got a lot of games that will be taking place within the next 15, 20 minutes, and then we got a late game later tonight. So good luck to all your teams as far as making the run for the top positions for the postseason. And, again, good luck to everybody. Good luck to everybody. So we actually have a few injuries. We have a few injuries to report right now. Cardinals, I would say from the St. Louis Cardinals, it looks like their catcher, Yadier Molina, is out of the lineup. They're actually keeping him out of the lineup on Wednesday, today's game against the Pirates, the day after injuring his back, which took place yesterday. He actually injured his back, his neck, and his shoulder in a home plate collision with Pittsburgh second baseman Josh Harrison in yesterday's game. The Cardinals lost last night 9-0, and they also lost their players. So that didn't really help their cause whatsoever. So it looks like he's going to be out for maybe a short extended period of time. They have him listed as day-to-day. After tonight, they go to Washington to face the Nationals in a four-game series, which will begin tomorrow evening. Now, Dodgers, apparently their center fielder, Matt Kemp, is out of the lineup a day after he collided with the center field wall. The test showed no structural damage to his left knee or his jaw. He was not in the starting lineup for today's game against the Rockies, and he's right now listed as day-to-day with a bone bruise around his left knee, and his he's also suffering from intense body soreness. He should be fine. They have him listed as day-to-day. He should be back in the lineup within the next 2 or 3 days. Basically what happened was he ran into a wall while chasing a fly ball. And let's be honest, we've seen this, you know, a lot. Dodgers manager Don Mattingly, he basically summed it up by saying he felt like a truck hit him. Yeah, that's got to be the worst pain in the world if that's the case. And some people don't live through that, to be honest with you. So those are the injuries right now. Now, coming up, I have the second half of our show. We're taking calls at 347-327-9586. Again, that's 347-327-9586. The second half of the show I'm going to devote to the legacy of former Charger great, LaDainian Tomlinson, who has retired this offseason. He's moved on into the broadcast booth now, but his football career is officially over. And good for him. Good for him. You know, it's hard to lead a game, but it wasn't difficult for him whatsoever. I listened to his press conference, and he had no regrets about retiring whatsoever. So that being said, congratulations to him for having a stellar career. And so what if he didn't win a championship? Big deal. A lot of great players didn't win championships. Who said you had to win one to be considered great? Do you know how many average players, do you know how many draft busts have won Super Bowl rings? I can name a few. And I will talk about that as well coming up in the broadcast. And I'll give you a hint. One of them, he still plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. So keep in mind, we got that coming up. And, again, I'm going to just basically look, I'm going to really, really rank him where I feel like he should be ranked as among the greatest backs in NFL history. And I'm not afraid to talk about this. This could be a heated topic, so I'm expecting probably a few people to call in and really, really express their opinion on this situation. So we're going to be taking calls 347-327-9586. Coming up, we got the main event topic, LT's legacy. We got that coming up here on the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket Nation, get ready for a power trip. Be right back. Second half of our show has begun. and we are talking about LT's legacy, not Lawrence Taylor, Danian Tomlinson, former running back, great running back of the San Diego Chargers, also spent some time with the New York Jets, played a couple years there. And I remember when he first officially announced his retirement, I had a feeling he was going to do it at some point, but I just wasn't sure when exactly. My whole thing was I was wondering when it was going to happen because we kind of saw it coming probably around 2009 when he left San Diego, but he chose to play with the Jets. He signed with them as a free agent in 2010. Both parties had moved on at the time. And I think that at that time I felt like, well, it was nice to see him at least still stay in the game, you know, because let's face it, we live in an era now where a lot of players will change teams out of the blue. Out of the blue. It's happened. Did anybody really expect Jerry Rice to leave San Francisco? When he did, he was out. Went to Oakland, got back to the Super Bowl. He lost, but still, he went over there, became pretty productive. And then he had brief stints with the Broncos and Seahawks, but he never really made the rosters on those teams. And it was just, he did make the roster with the Seahawks, I believe, in 2004, but he wasn't much of a, he didn't play much, to be honest with you. As far as LT is concerned, this is what I believe. I believe that Danian Tomlinson, to me, is one of the top five running backs in the history of the NFL. Clearly, by far. And these are my top five, and these are not in order. Right? I got LaDainian Tomlinson, I got Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, Jim Brown, and Emmitt Smith. Those are the top five backs to me. Those are my top five backs ever. And I think that's fitting. And when I think of some of the other running backs like Tony Dorsett and Jerome Bettis and Curtis Martin, who became the first and only NFL player, the NFL running back to rush for over 1,000 yards in each of his first 11 seasons, no other running back has ever done it, not even LT. LT didn't do that, and it's just an incredible accomplishment for Curtis Martin. And congratulations again to Curtis Martin for being inducted into the Football Hall of Fame. He certainly deserves it. And here's another thing. Curtis Martin didn't win a Super Bowl either. So who was it that said you had to win a Super Bowl to really, really be considered great? If you got great talent and you had a lot of production, had a lot of accomplishments as far as statistics and a lot of milestones, so what if you haven't won a championship? It's not a big deal. It's not. It really isn't a big deal. And I will be the first to tell you that a lot of great players over the years have you know, not won championships. A lot of great runners, to be honest with you, didn't win championships. Eric Dickerson never won a Super Bowl. Barry Sanders never won a Super Bowl. Jim Brown didn't win a Super Bowl, but he played in the era way before the Super Bowl was introduced. But he did win championships back in his day. So that's just the way it is. Jerome Bettis didn't win a Super Bowl until the end of his career, so it took him a while. So who was it that said you really had to win a Super Bowl to be considered great? I just think that that's a bunch of baloney. I think that's something that should be just thrown out of the window because that's not necessarily the case. However, when it comes to making the Hall of Fame, if you're a quarterback or even a running back that's never won a championship, you know, it's going to be a little difficult for you to get in there, you know, on the first ballot, maybe even the second. But as far as I'm concerned, I think LT is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he'll get in for sure. I think his statistics speak for himself. 13,684 career rushing yards, 145 career rushing touchdowns, 4.3 yards per carry average, which is one of the best ever. Barry Sanders had a 5-point career yard per carry average, which is the best ever. And I just think that he was just phenomenal, on so many levels. And he's got so many milestones. As far as, like, you know, performances, to me, his best year was in 2006 when he was the regular season MVP. He set so many milestones. In fact, he ran for 28 touchdowns. He had He had 31 touchdowns overall. He ran for 28, caught three. He led the league in rushing that year with 1,815 yards, which to this day stands out as the most throughout his career year by year. He had 348 carries, which is impressive. And he had a 5.2 yards per carry average that season as well. And he even threw for two touchdowns. Would you believe that he completed two or three passes that year, 20 total yards, and both of his completions were for touchdowns? He actually has thrown for seven touchdowns in his career. Now, in the postseason, he didn't always have great success, but I'll say in the one game in that 2006 postseason, he in that game against the Patriots, he ran for 23 times for 123 yards and scored two touchdowns. Even though the Chargers lost that game, the sad part about it was after that game was over, he was going back and forth with some of the Patriots players, including his former teammate Rodney Harrison. This is basically alluding to when some of the Patriots players was imitating that ridiculous lights-out dance that former Chargers linebacker Sean Merriman used to do. And Sean Merriman just got cut by the Buffalo Bills, by the way. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me whatsoever. But anyway, they were imitating the dance, and LT took offense to it. You know, he stood up for his teammate. Good for him, you know. And he even criticized Belichick, Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach. He basically said that the organization, including the players, had no class, and he said it came from the head coach. And I was like, wow. Yeah, there's a lot of guts to say that. But he stood by them. He stood by those comments, and he said what he said, and that was it. He retired officially on June 18th of this year. He signed a ceremonial contract with the San Diego Chargers and then immediately announced his retirement. That way he can retire as a San Diego Charger. So he ranks fifth in NFL history in career rushing yards, second in touchdowns, and third in career total touchdowns. So congratulations. Congratulations to him. And, again, I just think that he has been so phenomenal. I certainly will rank him among one of the greats ever. Now, here's the thing. When he was going into his college career, he was recruited by many schools, but he wasn't necessarily considered by one of the nation's top running backs coming out of high school. And many felt this way was because he did not play running back until his senior year of high school. By then, you know, many top colleges have already made their recruiting choices by then. So because of that, he accepted an athletic scholarship to attend Texas Christian University, which is a small school, which at the time was a member of the Western Athletic Conference, which is the WAC for short. So basically in 1997 through 2000, he played for the TCU Horned Frogs football team in that conference. Basically, prior to his arrival there, TCU never really had a lot of success. They only appeared in one bowl game in their previous 12 seasons, two in their previous 34, and was just known as a bad school to playing in a bad conference, a minor conference rather, after the breakup of the Southwest Conference. But basically what happened was in 1998, he helped the team get to their first bowl win in 41 years, beating the University of Southern Cal. They beat USC in the Sun Bowl that year. And during his junior year in 1999, he set an NCAA record for most rushing yards in a single game. He had 406 against UTEP, and that record still stands today. Nobody has not even really come close to breaking that record from a running back standpoint. Maybe Denard Robinson can beat that record. Who knows? It's always possible with him. Now, in his senior year in 2000, he left the NCAA for the second year. He had 2,158 yards and 22 touchdowns, and he was recognized as unanimous first-team All-American. So he won the Doak Walker Award as the nation's best running back, was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, but he came fourth in the voting. So his career numbers for his college career ended with 5,263 yards, ranking sixth in NCAA Division I history. They even had his jersey retired. So he set some great milestones in college, and some of those milestones still stands today. So congratulations to him. He was a consensus first-team All-American 2000. He was the Mobile Alabama Bowl MVP of that same year. He won the Doak Walker Award, obviously. He won the Jim Brown Trophy of that year. And he was the Senior Bowl Most Valuable Player in 2001, which was his final career college game. Now, going into the NFL draft, there was a lot of knock on him for not being a great prototypical back. They didn't regard him as being a fast guy, very explosive guy. Some even felt like he was a little bit out of shape to play the running back position. They felt like he was a little bit too heavy. But that didn't stop the San Diego Chargers from taking him. Basically, what happened was the Chargers at the time in the 2000 season, they had a 1-15 record, which is the worst record in the NFL. So they had the first draft selection. They took the first overall pick, but they traded the pick to the Atlanta Falcons, who took Michael Vick, number one overall. Now, in many ways, a lot of people consider this one of the top draft trades of all time, including me, really, because both guys have had some very very great careers, especially Tomlinson. Basically, the Chargers took Tomlinson with the fifth overall pick, so they kind of traded down a little bit, but they wanted him, and at the time they had to the Falcons had to part with former wide receiver Tim Dwight, who was a special teams threat. He had a great year for them in 1998. He was a very productive player when healthy. So the Chargers wanted Tim Dwight in that deal, and Atlanta was willing to part with him. And they did so. They did that. They didn't regret it. They were not looking back. Atlanta got the guy that they wanted. The Chargers got the guy that they wanted, and the rest was history. But basically, it was a big trade. So basically, sorry about that for the interruption, but basically that was a big trade. So in exchange for San Diego's first draft pick, in which Atlanta took Vic, Chargers, they took Atlanta's fifth Atlanta's number fifth overall pick, which they used, obviously, to take LT. Atlanta's third-round pick of that year, which they used to take Tay Cody, who is a former defensive back. He only played about 2-3 years with the Chargers, and then he moved on to play in the Canadian Football League for a few years. So he wasn't regarded as a highly touted pick. He didn't really do much throughout his career. He only played 19 games, started 11, only had 66 career tackles, 2 interceptions, and 1 fumble recovered. So, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. But the Chargers also took Atlanta's second-round pick in 2002, which they used to take Rashay Caldwell, who he was best known for his time with San Diego, and he was best known for his time in New England. And he also spent time with Washington, and he last played in 2008. He was on the St. Louis Rams practice squad, but they cut him, so he ended up retiring. He hasn't played since. You know, I guess you could say he's still a free agent, but he hasn't played since. But he hasn't had that much of a productive career, but you know, he was for the Patriots, which is pretty much his best time. He for a while he was known as their top receiver. Now, also Tim Dwight was also in that package. So San Diego they got quite a few picks out of that deal. John Butler, who was the Chargers general manager at the time, made the deal, and he was the one who wanted Tim Dwight on that team. In Atlanta, they didn't hesitate. They agreed and they took the draft and everything. Going into the draft, LT, he weighed about 221 pounds. He was a chiseled guy, ran a good 40-yard dash, got a 13 on his wonder leg. He was a pretty smart, intelligent guy. He was, I guess you could say he wasn't super sufficient, but he really, really turned it up real quickly from the time that the Chargers had him take the field in his first game. He was immediately their starting running back. Again, you know, he didn't waste no time. He didn't waste no time getting any great success. In each of his first 7 seasons with the team, he ran for over 1,200 yards, which is a big accomplishment. I mean, over 1,000 yards is good, but when you eclipse 1,200 and even 1,500, that's a big accomplishment, a great accomplishment. Caught over 50 receptions, was an efficient passer, effective, very effective, completing 8 career passes, 7 of them for touchdowns. So basically he has a 154.4 passer rating, which is one of the top best of all time. The top highest is 158.3 that you can get. Now, if he had gone 8 for 8, he would have gotten a 158.3. So in his rookie season, even though the Chargers were still a bad team, he ran for 1,236 yards. In 2003, he became the first player in NFL history to rush for over 1,000 yards and record 100 receptions in the same season. So this is when he first really became a workhorse. And he was just a quick, explosive guy. So he got better and better as his career went on. And in 2004, when the Chargers made the postseason for the first time in so many years, he was a big part of that. They had Drew Brees as their quarterback, who they also took in the 2001 draft later on in that draft. The two of them, they became quite a tandem. A lot of people thought that they were going to be the future of the team, the future of the organization. That is until Brees ended up moving on to the Saints as a free agent because Chargers' current general manager now, A.J. Smith, opted not to re-sign him to a long-term deal, especially after Brees suffered that shoulder injury, and they decided to go with Phillip Rivers, who they felt would be more sufficient. So anyway, so Tomlinson had a great year in 2006. Now keep in mind, since then, do you know how many running backs we have had over the years really come in and just apparently they've had a few good years? Tomlinson was one of the backs who really, really kept it together. Curtis Martin, he kept it together up until his career ended in 2006, 2007. And he was just a rare running back who really, really, really kept it going for an extended period of time. When I think about some of the other running backs, I mean, think about this. We've had a number of backs, you know, between that time, 2001, I would say between 2002 and now that have, you know, had a few good years, and the next thing you know, he just disappeared and fell off the face of the earth. Freeze Holmes, Larry Johnson, Jamal Lewis, Rudy Johnson, Tatum Bell, Edgerrin James, Clinton Portis, Eddie George, his career didn't last very long. You also got to take Lamont Jordan, Willie Parker, I would say probably Amon Green, definitely Amon Green. Another guy I would have to say is Deshaun Foster, Sean Alexander. Absolutely, Sean Alexander. A lot of people were really saying that him and LT were probably the top two running backs because Alexander, he set the new rushing touchdown record in 2005, and he broke the record that year, and he had a very, very productive season. He was part of the big reason why the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl that year. Another few running backs, I would say, that necessarily hasn't lasted that very long. Ruben Drones, who bounced around a few teams. Brian Westbrook, who hadn't really played that long. And Brian Westbrook, he announced his retirement yesterday. So farewell to him. Happy trails. Congrats on a very very productive career. He didn't play very long, but he was quite an explosive workhorse running back who he was known more as a receiver. And I kind of hated and despised Andy Reid for not utilizing him more as a running back. He just kept using him too much as a wide receiver, and I think that's part of the reason why his career kind of winded down a little bit. Another running back, I would have to say, who I guess you could say he kind of fell off the face of the earth a little bit, mainly because we haven't seen much of him over the past few years. Kevin Faulk of the New England Patriots. The Patriots have gone through so many running backs that they've used so many, like, in their offensive system, their offensive scheme, that they really don't truly rely on running back. They just go through the list of all their running backs on their roster, which is pretty good. You know, they try and keep their guys healthy over an extended period of time. some of the other running backs, I would have to say you can make a case for Charlie Garner. He was another one of those backs that fell off the mat real quickly. Julius Jones, what the hell happened to him? Seriously. That's another guy who really, really fell off. Ricky Williams, if it had not been for his little retirement that he took back in 2004, he would have been a guy to really, really keep it going because he just retired this offseason as well. So if you take away that time that he missed, he would have been another running back that kept it going because he was drafted in 99, 2 years before LT. So unfortunately, he didn't play every year since he was drafted, and that falls squarely on him. So, you know, that's something that he has to live with. So, yeah, a lot of these running backs, they just kind of fell off the map, and that was it for a lot of them, unfortunately. But it's nice to see one guy out of the bunch really, really keep it together. And LT, I want to say congratulations to you again. Your career has been really, really amazing, really amazing. Now, real quickly, I want to announce again, we're taking calls at 347-327-9586. Basically, we're just profiling the career of LT, LaDainian Tomlinson, the great running back of the San Diego Chargers. Also spent a couple seasons with the New York Jets. Now, during his time up there in the Big Apple, he was basically more of the backup. He played backup to Sean Green. He didn't have a lot of 100-yard games, but he did set a milestone in which he passed Tony Dorsett for seventh on the all-time rushing list in 2010. And then later on that year, he surpassed Marcus Allen for sixth on the all-time list. Marcus Allen, to me, was another great back who I would put in my top 10. Tony Dorsett was absolutely great. Eric Dickerson, who Tomlinson also passed. So basically in 2010, he surpassed three great running backs in Dorsett, Dickerson, and Allen. And all three of those guys were great. Dorsett and Allen, they were Super Bowl winners. Eric Dickerson, he played in one Super Bowl, but he was still a great back, and he still has the record for most rushing yards in the season. The only running back right now I can see surpassing that, well, I thought was going to surpass it, was Chris Johnson, but we'll see. He still has a shot to do it, so maybe he'll do it this year. Now, basically, he did have quite a great game in the 2010 wild card game against the Colts, where the Jets pretty much went back to Indy and got revenge after losing to them the year before. Tomlinson was a big part. He had 82 yards on 16 rushing attempts, ran for both Jets touchdowns in that victory. He always had a great career against Indy. He always played well against them. Now, they went to New England the following week in that divisional game, and they won on 20-21. Tomlinson only had 10 attempts for 49 yards, but he caught a touchdown, and it was his seventh career postseason touchdown. Now, they kind of ran into a brick wall and out of gas against the Steelers in the AFC title game. They lost 24-19, and he only had 9 carries for 16 yards and didn't score a touchdown. He had a chance to score one, which they were down 24-10, and they were deep in the Steelers' territory. It was on a 4th-and-goal from the 1-yard line. Had a chance to punch it in, and unfortunately, he came up short. But at that time, he was still widely regarded as a good, productive backup running back, and he provided some depth to that the Jets running back depth chart. Now, as far as not winning a championship is concerned, I used to be one of those guys that said that, you know, winning the championship was a big deal. It kind of is, you know, to widely be regarded. But here's the thing. If you set so many great milestones like he has, Super Bowls should not be a requirement. I'm just going to put the word out there right then and there, leave it the way it is, and be done with it. Because my thing is this. Like I said, a lot of great running backs did not win Super Bowls. I said it at the top of the show, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson, those guys didn't win Super Bowls. Jim Brown and Gale Sayers, even though they played in pre-Super Bowl eras, they didn't win Super Bowls either, but I know they won championships, obviously. Actually, Gale Sayers never really won a championship either, but he was still great. He didn't play a lot of years, but he was still great. He was still phenomenal to watch, and I'll give him that. But again, keep in mind, a lot of these running backs, you know, you don't have to be widely regarded as, you know, a great running back to win, you know, a Super Bowl or anything. Tomlinson has already set enough milestones as far as I'm concerned. I mean, just look at this. He's a 5-time Pro Bowler. He's a 4-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time second-team All-Pro, 2-time NFL leading rusher in 2006 and 2007. 2006, he was the AFL, the AP NFL MVP of the regular season. He was also the Offensive Player of the Year. He was he is part of the 10,000 yards rushing club, 5th leading rusher all time, 2nd all time touchdowns, most rushing touchdowns in the season. He was the Walter Payton Man of the Year in 2006. He was the Barstar Man of the Year Award in 2007. He's part of the NFL 2000s All Decade Team, and he's part of the San Diego Chargers 50th Anniversary Team. He is their best running back ever. Period. Period. And really, it hasn't been close. I can't think of any Chargers running backs who came close. The Chargers teams of the past were always known more as a running team. Some of the other notable Chargers running backs I can recall were Eric Pegram and Natron Means, but they were never great. They never played very long either. Tomlinson came in and just dominated right from the get-go, right from the get-go. And I have so much respect for him. I kind of hated going up against him because he always used to play against some of the teams I cheered for. Like, he had a few games against the Lions, and, you know, he plays in the same division as the Broncos, and I'm a big Broncos fan. I've been a Broncos fan going back to the John Elway days. And every time he had great success against them, although he didn't right away, I was like, man, that dude, oh, I can't stand him. But I've always respected him and his accomplishments. And I just think that he's great. I just think that he's a guy that's just a phenomenal person, classy guy on the field, off the field. Just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And I will tell you right off the bat that I think he is just an incredible, incredible piece of God-given talent who a lot of people didn't give a chance right away. A lot of people were skeptical about him. But look what he did. Look at what he was able to accomplish. And people are still doubting him. Give me a break. You know, that really, really upsets me. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what anyone says, but Danny Tomlinson is one of the top 5 backs of all time, and he certainly is up there among some of the greatest. So say what you want about the guy. You may like him. You may not like him. Whoop-de-doo. And take it for what it's worth. Take it for what it is worth. He was phenomenal to watch. And he's certainly been the best running back of his era. By far, like I said, there was a lot of great running backs who stepped in and have, you know, really, really competed for a few years, but none of them kept it together as long as he has. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm just happy for what he's been able to do. And to me, he is the first ballot Hall of Famer. I believe he'll get there. I know for sure he'll get there. And if he doesn't at least make the first ballot, he will definitely get in on the second. And you can rest assured on that. No question about it. And keep in mind, this guy came up the hard way. He went to a bad San Diego Chargers team and made them a playoff contender just about three, four years later. How about that? How about that? And to be honest with you, from 2005 up until 2008, they were the most talented team in football. By far, by far. They got a good quarterback, Phillip Rivers. They had Vincent Jackson at the time. They still got Antonio Gates, who's one of the top 5 tight ends in the game. They always had a good offensive line, and they've had some good notable players on defense. But he was their guy. He was their big piece. So take that for what it's worth. Imagine if LaDainian Tomlinson never played on the San Diego Chargers team. What do you think they would have looked like over the years? Who knows? Who knows? So, again, to me, Danny Tomlinson is one of the best, and he will go down as one of the greatest of all time. Of all time. And I'm not trying to pull a Kanye West or nothing, but I think he's great. He was great. He was phenomenal to watch. And when I think about some of the best running backs that have dominated in certain areas, I think about Jim Brown when he dominated in his era, Gale Sayers when he dominated in his era. And then you also had some of the great backs in the 70s, you know, with Larry Zonka and Franco Harris, Tony Dorsett, and then O.J. Simpson. Even O.J. was great. Take nothing away from him. O.J. was great. Then later on you had Eric Dickerson and Marcus Allen and Roger Craig, and he was more of an all-purpose back. And then later on, and even later, you had Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith and Jerome Bettis, Curtis Martin, Marshall Faulk, and now you got LaDainian Tomlinson. And when I think about some of these running backs now who have a chance to really, really be great, you got to look at Chris Johnson, and you got to look at Adrian Peterson, you got to look at Arian Foster, you got to look at Jamaal Charles, when healthy, Ray Rice, obviously, most definitely, even though he's holding out right now, Maurice Jones-Drew, definitely. Steven Jackson, when he's healthy. LeSean McCoy, he looks like he could be a really, 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 really good running back. You can make a case for Rashard Mendenhall, Darren McFadden. You can make a case for those guys. You even make a case for Sean Green of the Jets, who Tomlinson was a backup for throughout his time there in New York. You can make a case for these guys. You can make a case for a lot of these running backs right now who have a chance to really, really be great. Even though it's more of a pass-happy league now, I still think that in this particular era, running backs are really, really vital. And like I was saying earlier, a young quarterback, especially a young quarterback's best friend, is a good complementary running back who can do a little bit of everything. Run the ball, catch passes out of backfield, catch passes up the middle, block, help protect the quarterback, do all those little things you need to do to really be considered great. And I think about a lot of these things that a lot of these guys have done, you know, some of these milestones. I mean, think about it. Walter Payton, to me, was just all world. This is what I was saying. The reason why I feel like Tomlinson is in the top five is just for the simple fact that he has done so much. The game has gotten more physical now. It's gotten faster, and it's gotten even crazier. And for him to be able to do what he has done, I think it's just phenomenal. I really think it's phenomenal. I will tell you right off the bat that despite how much physical and much more quicker the game has gone, look at what he's accomplished. And I look at some of these backs now who have suffered injuries and stuff like that. Some of these guys, they just haven't really done it. Now, Tomlinson has had some flaws too, you know, the whole incident going up against the Patriots, and then one particular postseason, actually it was in 2007, the following year when the Chargers and Patriots faced each other again. This time it was the 2007 AFC title game, where Tomlinson was basically sitting on the sideline looking like Darth Vader. Had the helmet with the visor on, had the long coat, and he didn't participate in that game. You have to wonder, what would have happened if he played? Maybe the Chargers would have won. Maybe they would have been the first team to beat the Patriots and not the Giants. But think about this. Phillip Rivers, their quarterback, he played that game with a torn ACL. You mean to tell me the lesser injuries that Tomlinson had, he couldn't play either? Wow. Unbelievable. And I commend Phillip Rivers for being one of the toughest players in the game. A lot of people will maybe consider Tomlinson being soft because of that particular moment, because he didn't play in that game, but I'm not going to take away nothing from his accomplishment. I think he was phenomenal. I think he was great, and I think he'll go down as being one of the greatest of all time. Bar none, you cannot take away what the guy has done from a statistical standpoint. You cannot take away what he has done as far as putting up big numbers, you know, year by year. You can't take that away from him. You really can't. So, you know, think about it from that perspective. He has really, really done what he is supposed to do, and I'm very, very happy for him. He played his best when he could, and even when he sat out, you know, like him or not like him, he was great. He was great. I just think about comparing him to some of the best ever. He was, to me, he was just so explosive. So explosive when I think about going up him and Walter Payton and Barry Sanders and all those other guys, and how Daniel Thompson was so good with moving his feet, had great vision, and he could see the field before him. He could escape, you know, defensive players. He was tough to tackle. He was so quick. You know, he might have been one of the fastest backs ever. Take nothing away from him. He was phenomenal. And I will tell you, I enjoy watching him run, much as the next person. Just a great, incredible piece of talent. And for Walter Payton to be able to do what he did, he had a great defense. Barry Sanders, you know, to me, I tell people this all the time, and, you know, you can call me a homer or whatever you want to call me. I feel like Barry Sanders is the best back ever, and I say this because look at what Jim Brown did. Jim Brown had Otto Graham as his quarterback. He had great coaching. He had great teammates. Walter Payton had a great defense and great coaching. Emmitt Smith had a great defense and great coaching. And even bigger and better, he had Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin. Think about that. And he had a great, great, phenomenal offensive line to protect him. Imagine how many Super Bowls Barry Sanders would have won if he played in Dallas's offense. Imagine how many Super Bowls Ladainian Thompson would have played if he played behind Troy Aikman and lined up in a Cowboys uniform. Imagine that. Think about it. It's pretty easy to see. You know, I just think that he was widely regarded as one of the greatest by far. I know Walter Payton is smiling down from heaven and saying, "Yep, congratulations, kid. Congratulations." I also think that Jim Brown, I know he's happy for him. I know Barry Sanders, I know he's happy for him. Emmitt Smith, I know he's happy for him. Marshall Faulk, you know, a lot of these great running backs, Jerome Bettis and Curtis Martin and Tony Dorsett and Eric Dickerson, Franco Harris and Marcus Allen and Larry Zonka and even O.J. Simpson, wherever the hell he's locked up at. if he's watching, if they let him watch, he might not have a TV in his padded cell. But anyway, the point is that Danny Thompson was a great running back. You cannot tell me that he wasn't. And a lot of people might consider him overrated. Are you kidding me? Really? Unbelievable. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. 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 I don't know what to say to that, honestly. I really don't know what to say to that. It's just unbelievable how people can say something like that and say that he wasn't a great running back or whatever. Give me a break, man. Come on, nah. Give me a freaking break. I like watching him run, and that's just the bottom line. Now, I will say, it would have been nice to see him get a Super Bowl under his belt, but let's be honest, he played in an era where the Patriots have dominated, the Steelers have dominated, the Colts, they've dominated, although the Chargers have beaten the Colts a couple times in the postseason, but it was still hard to get past those other teams anyway. And go back to the 2004 wild card round when the Chargers hosted the Jets. The Chargers were supposed to win that game, and the Jets pulled off the upset. And the following year, in 2005, the Chargers, they won 11 games, and they did not make the postseason. In fact, they lost a couple games down the stretch. They had a Monday night home loss to the Steelers, who actually ended up getting that six-seeded playoff spot. Not to mention, they also had lost to the Dolphins team at home. So basically, those two losses were at home. Imagine if they won both those games. They probably would have gotten the second seed, or maybe at least tied Denver for first place in the AFC West, because Denver had won 13 games that year, and they had the number two seed. And Pittsburgh beat San Diego on that Monday night game in the closing minutes. And the Miami loss was even more haunting. Not to mention, the funny thing was the Chargers were the first team to beat the Colts that year. The Colts were undefeated. I think they were 13-0. And then the Chargers went there to their field and beat them. And beat them. Thompson had a productive game. Michael Turner had a very productive game, who at the time was San Diego's backup running back before he went to Atlanta. And then next thing you know, the Chargers, they missed the playoffs. They missed the playoffs. That probably would have been them winning the Super Bowl and not the Steelers. But here's the thing. I think they would have beaten the Bengals in the wild card round. I think they would have beaten the Colts in the postseason again because they beat them in the regular season and they had their number. Not to mention, again, they beat them in the playoffs a couple years later, twice within a three-year span. And they also, they probably would have beaten Denver too, because at the time they were, Denver and them were beating up each other, literally. So take that for what it's worth. And in 2006, they had the best record in the league. They were 14-2. They had won their final 12 regular season games, and they lost to the Patriots in the divisional round. But that was a tough game anyway, but still. You got to go back to the fourth quarter late in the game where Marlon McCree, the Chargers safety at the time, got an interception. He picked off Tom Brady, and he was looking to run a score, fumbled the football, and the Patriots recovered, and they went on to win the game. That had to have been demoralizing for LT. And you saw what happened after the game, you know, with the whole incident going, with him going up against some of the Patriots players and dissing them and dissing head coach Bill Belichick. It had to have been demoralizing for him. But they would get back to the postseason the following year. They lost to the Patriots in the AFC title game. They had a chance to beat them, and LT sat out. And then the following year, they lost to Pittsburgh in the divisional round, but that would have been a tough game anyway because Pittsburgh was really, really on top that year. But still, Chargers had a chance. So when you think about the postseasons where, you know, and even with the Jets, LT still had a chance to win because his first year with the team, they went to the AFC title game, and they lost again to the Steelers. Well, he lost again to the Steelers. And then last year, they didn't make the postseason at all, and I think he decided to just throw in the towel, and that was it. So that's just the way it is. But I will tell you that despite him not being able to win a championship, I still think he was one of the greats anyway. So take it for what it's worth. He was phenomenal. And again, he was great. He was great. He was great. So, again, congratulations to him for setting so many milestones. I just think that he has done so much for the game where he was one of the more, one of the highly regarded best players to play the position, the best players to, suit up for the in the position to suit up to play running back. So take that for what it's worth. Take that for what it's worth. And again, he's got my vote. He's got my vote for first ballot Hall of Famer. If not, he'll get in on the second. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care what anybody says. He'll get in. He'll get in. He'll get in. I'm counting on it. I'm counting on it. So I think what this whole situation is, he leaves behind a great legacy. He was just amazing, just amazing. Just amazing. Just amazing. Just amazing. And he's a guy that when you look back on his career and you look back on what he's accomplished, you cannot tell me that he wasn't one of the greatest. I certainly enjoyed watching him play. I certainly enjoyed watching him run. And it looks like the Chargers got themselves another good running back piece with Ryan Matthews. We'll see what he can do. Can he be the next LT? That remains to be seen. Can he be the next great Chargers running back? That remains to be seen. That remains to be seen. When I think about some of the best players ever in San Diego Chargers history, I got to put LT right up there with Junior Seau, Dan Fouts, Kellen Winslow Sr., and to me, another great there, one of their former head coaches, Don Coryell. To me, those are the best five Chargers players ever. Ever. I don't care what anyone says. Best ever. those five really, really were the highlight names of that franchise. Those guys were just phenomenal to watch. Just amazing. Just amazing. So, that being said, again, congratulations to LT. And I just think about what he has, what he leaves behind. What will the Chargers do now? What will the Jets do now? The two teams that he played for. All eyes will be on the Jets this year. All eyes have been on them since the training camp. And all eyes will continue to be on the Chargers. Because expectations have been high on them for years. So think about it. Think about it. Think about it. So, to all you football fans out there, whether you were a fan of him, whether you didn't like him, or whether you just watched him because he was going up against the team that you cheered for, you can never tell me or anyone that LT wasn't great. He did it when most of his career, he was the guy. He reminded me so much of Barry Sanders. He really did. He really did. He may have been a little bit taller, may have weighed more a little bit, may have been more quicker, more explosive, but he was just an amazing collection of great talent. And I can say this over and over again, I have and I will. I enjoyed watching him run. I'm not shocked by his retirement, but I was wondering if he was going to play one more year. Now, when I think about Barry Sanders' retirement, that was a shock. That was a complete shock. But I think about Emmitt Smith's retirement. Well, Emmitt was at the end of his career. It was time for him to go. He had no choice but to break all Walter Payton's all-time elite and rushing record because he played for so many years. He played basically for 15 years just about. He played, spent the last two seasons as a Cardinal. And he LT was kind of like the same thing. He spent the last 2 years of his career with a different team. Instead of the team he spent most of his career playing for, set the most of his milestones and everything. But now this would be the first football season without the likes of LaDainian Tomlinson, without Ricky Williams, and without a lot of other players who have retired. And it's been a rough offseason for the San Diego Chargers franchise, if you think about it. The death of Junior Seau, that hurt. I know that hurt them. LT's retirement. They lost Benson Jackson to free agency. So this is a team that's kind of digging itself out of a hole a little bit. So you have to wonder, what is this Chargers team going to do now? Can they compete with Denver this year in the AFC West? They've shown that they can do it. In the last 7, 8 years, they've shown that they can do it. But can they do it again? And despite Peyton Manning, now keep in mind, the Chargers have had some great success against Peyton Manning. They really have. So what do you think they're going to do now? What do you think they're going to do? Because with Kansas City, getting back Jamaal Charles healthy, Dwayne Bowe is back. All they got to do is just take care of the quarterback situation. They'll be better. They'll be a better competitor. Oakland, even though they don't have Michael Bush anymore, but they still got Darren McFadden, who's still a very explosive running back when he's healthy. Carson Palmer, give him a full season, see what he's going to do. All eyes will be on them, too. All eyes will definitely be on them. And I want to say again, congratulations as we come to the end of our broadcast. I just got to say, again, congratulations to LaDainian Tomlinson for having such a very, 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 very wonderful career. It's been an honor for me to watch you play. It's been an honor for me to sit back and just, you know, watch you have such great success. So I say thank you. Thank you for showering us with your great talent, your great durability, your great endurance, everything that you've done for the game, for the fans, for the rest of us. LT, you are one of the top five running backs in the history of the National Football League. And again, I say thank you for showering us with your talents and everything that you have done. Well, folks, we've come to the end of our fourth installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. I want to say thank you to everyone who has shown this show some support. Thank you to everyone who's allowed me to come in, bring the best that I can bring to you. I'm very happy. You all put a smile on my face, so I just say thank you. Sometimes I get a little emotionally overwhelmed when it comes to things like that, but thank you. Thank you. As always, I like to spend the last few minutes sending a few shout-outs to people. I want to say congratulations, shout-outs to Edmund Allen Jones, Angela Roberts Johnson, two of my co-actors who I filmed with this past weekend for my upcoming independent film, Love Has a Mind of Its Own. They did a fantastic job. Mark Luarich, I hope I said your last name right. I want to say thank you. You did a phenomenal job, my friend. A very phenomenal job. I also want to send a shout-out to my big brother, my family, Giles Key. He did a phenomenal job. To his cousin, LaRon Thomas. To all my castmates for The Goblin Lady. You guys are doing a great job, and I can't wait to shoot you off with both movies this weekend. To my... my little cutie pie, to my baby girl, Noelle Fry, a.k.a. Lady Rocket. I want to say thank you, sweetie, for accepting me. I know you got a play that you got coming up called Conversations. They will be showing that every Friday and every Saturday. So if you're in the Detroit area, it's every Friday and every Saturday of September at the Detroit International Institute. For more, you can contact her, look her up on her page. I'm pretty sure she'll be more than happy to give you more information about that. Tickets, I believe, are $15. I think the show times are around 8 o'clock on those Fridays and Saturdays. So come on through and support. Come through and support. She deserves it. She's an incredible amount of talent. She is just so amazing with her craft. And even though she tends to be a little silly and a little cuckoo, she's going to be mad at me for saying that. But anyway, again, thank you. Sweetie, I love you. And I can't wait to see you again. I'm looking forward to another stellar performance of you. Keep up the great work, baby. To all my fans and my supporters, to everybody who's part of the Rocket Nation, to all my co-collaborators, to Andre Mr. X Harris, to Freddie Black, to Ken Van, my mentor, to my other mentor, Joshua Adams, to another mentor of mine, Carline Dixon, to all my peoples, Sean P. Williams, Carl Hale II, Deion Robinson, Javon Anderson, to Dell Banks, to Robert D. Thomas, to Vanessa Lynn, who's got her Red Carpet premiere of Boss Lady, which is coming up next month on the 27th. Be on the lookout for that. To everybody who's doing great things, to my homeboy, Malcolm Johnson, keep doing what you're doing. To Malcolm Roberson, do your thing, my young friend. You're doing a fantastic job. To all my other peoples, Shandy Rushing, who's an upcoming young actress, keep doing up your thing. To all my peoples, Jeffrey Ford, keep up the great work, my friend. Jason Keecher, keep doing your thing, my friend. To Mr. Dave Vance, you keep doing your thing. Bill Bouchard, to all the people who I've networked with, to all the people who have supported me, to all the people who I will continue to support, obviously. We need to help each other out in this business. To Marita Wagner, to Lloyd Cohen, to Steve Johnson, to just all of you guys. Keep up the great work. And if I haven't mentioned your name, you too. So I want to say God bless you all. Next week is part two from my first installment, part two of Are You Ready for Some Football, which will be taking place next Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 to 9 p.m. We'll continue to talk and I'll profile every team name by name, team by team, with upcoming expectations. Rocket Nation, take care of yourselves and each other. Get ready for a power trip. See you when I see you. Peace.